Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Alan Noble on resisting the idea new technologies should be thoughtlessly accepted for progress' sake.
It's a kind of optimism, a technological optimism, that believes that, taken to its extremes, it believes that technology is the thing that is going to save humanity from its sins and its the effects of the fall. That's really what it sees. That's the extreme version of it. And you do see that with some people who want to live forever, download their brains, and so on and so forth. And so sometimes it takes the version of fear. Sometimes it takes the version of hope. But in either case, there's this deep emotional drive that's motivating us to adopt, adopt, adopt.
Alan Noble, next. AI is here, and it's not slowing down. Get on the bandwagon or get left behind. English professor and author Alan Noble says we shouldn't just passively accept it, but rather carefully evaluate it. Spencer Dahlke is with Alan Noble to talk about his Substack piece, Why Should We Just Accept AI?
What prompted you to write this piece?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this conversation that's thrown out there a lot, which is this idea that AI is inevitable, that we can't really even have a conversation about whether or not AI should be taking over our lives, whether or not it should be forced into our workspaces, our classrooms, our churches, our writing, our arts, our music, our homes. This idea that it's inevitable, that we have to embrace it. And it just seems to me that that's a false premise, that we can, as humans, we are the ones creating AI. We are the ones making these decisions. We are the ones who make policies. We are the ones who choose whether to adopt or not adopt things, that we have agency. And I think this is actually a deeper problem with the contemporary world, where contemporary people don't feel like they have agency, where they don't feel like they have the choice to say no to technology or to other forces, when actually God has given us agency to say, no, I'm not going to adopt this thing. I'm not going to adopt the latest iPhone. I'm not going to adopt, in this case, the latest AI technology. It's not healthy for me in these specific ways.
Where do you think that culture is coming from, that we should just accept new technologies? Is it just marketing or what?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in one way, there is a march of technology, and I understand this. There is a march of technology, and so there are some prudential questions about whether we need to keep up, and if we don't keep up, will the Chinese just do it? And in that case, we being the Americans, will fall behind, and we will lose an AI battle, and society will collapse, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what concerns me there is that there's a lot of fear-mongering going on. There's a lot of fear that's put out. And that's part of my answer to your question, is that there's a lot of fear that's put out by AI companies, by CEOs, when they're talking about their products, is that there's a lot of fear given. You have to adopt these things, because if you don't, these terrible things are going to happen. You are going to fall behind. You are going to become somebody who's can't keep up in the global marketplace, or you're going to become obsolete, etc. And so fear drives a lot of it. But there's also this belief that progress and technological progress in particular will save us. It's a kind of optimism, a technological optimism, that believes that, taken to its extremes, it believes that technology is the thing that is going to save humanity from its sins and its the effects of the fall. That's really what it sees. That's the extreme version of it. And you do see that with some people who want to live forever, download their brains, and so on and so forth. And so sometimes it takes the version of fear. Sometimes it takes the version of hope. But in either case, there's this deep emotional drive that's motivating us to adopt, adopt, adopt.
What I'm hearing, it seems that there is even a faultiness in our culture that has, we've lost our grip on the gospel, obviously, but it seems that we've even lost what it means to be human, which used to be common knowledge not too long ago. Is it this fear of death? I guess just, to be very blunt with it, that is causing this cultural shift?
Yeah, the fear of death drives a lot of things, right? So there's a billionaire, I think he's a billionaire, named Brian Johnson, who famously or infamously, depending on your view, is really trying to live forever. And this is his religion, essentially. I think he even calls it that. I could be wrong. But he is disciplining his body. He has an extreme regimen, and he, you know, does all these activities and takes all these medicines and supplements and does all these procedures to extend his life indefinitely. And so there is a kind of drive for immortality that is involved. And the search for an AI that will cure all our diseases, that will solve all our problems, that will bring us to a kind of utopia, is also a kind of desire for heaven, a desire for eternity, a desire for what only God can provide. So I think for some people, for some who are hitching their wagon to a very elite understanding of what AI is possible, capable of doing, or they think AI is capable of doing, there can be a kind of utopian hope that is tied to a fear of death. But I like what you said about that loss of understanding of what humanity is, of what it means to be human, right? And so there, for Christians, we understand that we're made in the image of God, and there's something sacred there that can't be replaced by machines. And that, I do think we have lost that sense. And that's what's really tragic and what's really frightening, is that in so many ways, we have lost that understanding. My recent article is on the tendency to, or the trajectory of, replacing real human-made music and art with AI music. Right now, AI can make music that mimics, to a very extreme extent, human-made music. So the question becomes, do you just listen to AI music? And the argument I make is that only humans can intentionally, with personality, make human music, because there's an individual, there's a person behind it who's made in the image of God, and a machine can't replace that. And so, yes, we lose that humanity, and that is something, you know, we're made in the image of God, a machine isn't.
There's a good discussion to be had, I'm sure, about what is a good technology. I don't know if you've read Wendell Berry at all, but he writes a lot about, he writes about that. I guess to that point, you write in this piece that sometimes it's worth doing hard work because it helps develop our humanity. Would you kind of explain for us to that point then, I guess, what is your vision for what makes a good technology?
That's a great question. So I would say a good tool, a good technology, helps a human be more fully human. A good technology helps a human be more fully human. So it enables a human to exercise the gifts that God has given them, to grow in those gifts rather than offloading those gifts, or shrinking those gifts, or minimizing those gifts. So for me as a writer, I think a keyboard, the invention of a keyboard, the invention of writing utensils, the invention of paper, are tools that allow me to flourish by allowing me to put words to paper, words on a screen, and communicate to others. And those allow me to exercise my gifts. But when AI comes along and says, let me do the writing for you, now all of a sudden my gifts are not just enabled, or they're not actually encouraged to flourish, they're actually taken away from me. They're robbed from me. And instead, the machine is doing the gifting. And it's not actually gifting anymore. It's outputting, I would say. That's what it's doing. It's outputting. It's not gifting, because it is not a person, so it can't gift. I can gift, but a machine can't gift. So there's a difference there. So a good tool allows a human being to flourish as an image bearer of God. That's shooting from the hip, but that's what I would say.
Sure. And understanding you are shooting from the hip, of course. Can I give you a counterexample and help maybe flesh that definition out more?
Let's do it.
A plow. You know, hand breaking up the soil. We're using our hands. God gives us two hands to like do these sorts of things.
Yeah.
One could reasonably say we were replacing our hands by having a horse draw a plow behind it. What do you think about that?
As opposed to digging the soil with our hands? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking like what's it seems like technologies, I've heard it explained before by another person, roll back the effects of the fall. And one of those effects is toil. And so there are things that we can do. There is, I guess, a sort of replacing with technologies that just comes inherent with the technology. I don't know if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, there is a kind of replacement that happens, a replacement of taking away of some of the toil, taking away of some of the toil. Yeah. So, you know, when I type, it's easier than writing by hand. And so there is a kind of, for me at least, I know that's not true for everyone, but there is a kind of replacement of toil that's going on there. So my question would be, am I losing, is it enabling me to flourish more with who I am, with who God has made me as a human being, or is it robbing me of my excellence, of who God made me to be? And I would say that in that case, it's not actually, I'm not offloading something meaningful to do that. And I think that there's room for nuance here. I think there's room for nuance. But I do think that you get to a point where the nuance falls away, right? And so we want to think, when we're talking about technology, we want to think in terms of a spectrum, right? So there's room, there's places where tools are matters of wisdom, right? And you want to say, this tool could be prudentially used by someone, and it's really not, it's just a matter of wisdom, whether that's actually aiding or harming them. And so I think, for example, some people would say that writing by hand is highly valuable to them. It's an intimate act. You seeing their own handwriting and physically moving the pen or pencil is a deeply moving act to them, and it's part of their writing process. For me, writing a keyboard is all I need. My handwriting is terrible. I don't have that connection. I don't get it. But I think there's a categorical difference between what we're talking about there and making that leap from that kind of thing to asking AI to do the writing for me. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? That there's so much of a difference between those two things that we're moving to a different category.
So it's kind of like, what work is actually left for us to do once we let AI do all of it?
Right. Yeah. And how much of, again, of my gifting is left over, right? So when I type, am I losing something by not writing by hand? Perhaps. I might be losing something minor, something trivial. Maybe there'd be something a little bit meaningful by writing by hand. But if I ask AI to write or to do my thinking for me or to do my outlining for me, that's asking that tool to take a lot of my gifting, a lot of what God has asked me to do as a flourishing, creative human being. There's a big jump there. And so that's the point. So tools, again, I think you want to think on a spectrum here. What are they doing? What are they asking of you? How are they asking you to offload your labor?
Well, my guest today is Alan Noble. He is an associate professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University and a fellow for the Keller Center for Cultural Apologetics, and of course, author of Why Should We Just Accept AI? You're writing about technological determinism and the despair that perhaps we experience thinking that, well, I guess we're just going to have to accept these technologies. I can't help but think about the space race. I don't know if you listen to world radio at all, but they did a spot on while the Russians were rushing around, shall we say, to get to the moon. They were making mistakes. America took it a lot slower and actually was behind and ended up making it to the moon first. I'm curious what your thoughts about that and maybe cast a vision for what would the future look like if we were not so hasty to adopt these technologies.
That's an interesting analogy. I hadn't thought about that. No, I hadn't listened to that spot, but excuse me, I like that analogy because my stance is that we should, I wrote another piece for my Substack called Against Acceleration. And the whole premise was that what's driving this is this idea of acceleration, and that we must accelerate. We must move faster and faster and faster. And one of the things I discussed in that piece that you've mentioned is the fact that when it comes to education, we're actually moving so fast with ed tech, which is, you know, technology in the classroom, that we can't even measure whether it's effective in the classroom, because by the time we've done a study on whether this technology is effective in the classroom, it's already outdated and we're using a new model. Well, that's really problematic, because how do we know whether anything's effective? Well, we can't. So we find out something's really harmful to students, then the ed tech people can say, oh, well, that's fine, because we're not using that model anymore. We've moved on to this other AI bot tutor. And so they can always say, well, we've already improved it. And so there's no way of having accountability. That's really frightening. That's really frightening. So there's no way of holding accountability. So we're moving so fast. And so my vision, to answer your question, my vision would be that we are prudentially skeptical. And what I mean by that is, by prudentially, I mean, we're using the virtue of prudence to survey reality carefully. And we're skeptical in the sense that we're being cautious. We're slowing down. We know the evidence of what social media has done to us and our kids. We know that harm that that has done. We know that just adopting that was a really harmful mistake. And so we're going to be cautious this time and say, all right, we know that there's possibilities of some real good coming with AI. Let's allow this technology to develop, but maybe slowly adopt it. Maybe set some policies in place that protect children in particular. Maybe let's not rush to adopt it in our schools and in our colleges. Let's not rush to innovate. Let's slow down and think through the ramifications of what we're doing, because the consequences on our society can be just disastrous.
Don't even get me started on social media. Oh man,
yeah.
I have beef with it. But
yeah,
it's, I imagine, another source of despair, especially for Christians, could be we have like this vision of how we live as human beings before God and faculties and all these sorts of things, which you talk about in your article. But we still live like in a culture that is perhaps on the whole arrested by this sense of Jurassic Park. We have to do it because we can. How do we as Christians, I guess, be influences in the culture? How can we see real change happen?
I think we need to be what I would call Christian humanists. And what I mean by that is not human-centered, we're Christ-centered. But by humanists, I mean that we recognize that we are created in the image of God, and that God made humans above the animals, and that we are made in the image of God. And that means something, that we're above machines and we matter to him, and we should be celebrating our made in the image of godness, because by doing that we are honoring God and treating our temples as special and treating our ability to think creatively and critically and rationally as gifts from God, and striving to work with excellence with what we do, and celebrating other humans' works with excellence. And so I think practically what that looks like is humane education, for example, right? So like, are you sending your kids and supporting schools that promote reading? I mean, just, and are you reading yourself? Could be as simple as that, right? Are you just going to ChatGPT and getting a summary? That's a way of pushing back against this, right? Are you reading? We're becoming an illiterate culture, but reading is a valuable way of pushing back against this. Are you supporting humans who are creating creative works? Or are you just adopting the latest slop, right? because that's the reality. We're going to have more and more AI slop available to us, and it's going to be cheap, and it's going to be efficient, and it's going to be generic, and it's going to be everywhere. Are you buying that, or are you buying human-created works? And that's a way of pushing back. And that's, I think, a Christian way of pushing back, because when you do that, you're celebrating the gifts that God has given other human beings. And that's, I think, honoring to Him.
What do you like to do to reclaim your humanity?
I mean, I listed some of those things, right? I mean, I write for my Substack, and I don't use AI. And that's what I love doing that. I love to teach at Oklahoma Baptist University. I teach in our honors program, and I sit around a table with honor students who love great books, and we talk about books, and we read books together, and we talk about great literature, and our students actually read. I know I've heard so many horror stories of colleges where students are just assigned readings and they just don't read, or they just read a summary, and our students read and they love books, and that is invigorating and it's humane, and that's a powerful thing. You know, I spend time with my family. I go to church. I mean, that's the liturgies of the church, the, you know, taking the Lord's Supper, listening to sermons, worshiping together. That's part of being human as God designed us, being embodied as God designed us. Also, on Sunday, as a form of Sabbath rest, I read poetry for fun, not for research, not for preparing for class. I just read poetry.
Fantastic. I've heard poetry is good to read. I got to do more reading poetry. Well, it seems like there is a culture that is pushing back against AI. So there is a lot of reason not to despair, even
that's right,
as we push back. Readers walking away from your article, what is one actionable shift in their thinking and how they address AI and these technologies that they can bring with them? What would you want them to do?
Yeah, well, I would want to say that I'm not asking them to never use AI. I'm not an absolutist. I'm not a Luddite saying never use AI. So I'm not saying that. But I am saying that when they're using AI, they should be asking themselves, am I giving up something essential to who I am when I'm doing this task? Am I offloading something that is meaningless and trivial? And there are, you mentioned the word toil, there are things that are just mundane toil that we have to do in life that don't actually build our character, that don't actually move us towards flourishing, that don't actually contribute to our excellence as human beings, that we can offload. We do this all the time. We decide to use a dishwasher instead of washing dishes by hand, and there's nothing immoral or wrong about doing that. But what I'm asking is to think about it, right? Take the time to think about your use of it, because what we've discussed so far is that there's a passive choice to just not take the time to think, should I use this? But to just, I can do this. You know, you mentioned Jurassic Park. I can do this, so I'm going to do it, right? And my admonition would be, let's slow down and ask, is this a good use of AI, or is this actually harmful to who I am as a person created in the image of God? Because this is a new technology, and we don't really know what those answers are yet. So let's figure those out.
Is there anything that I have not asked about your article that you want to bring out?
Like I said, I just want to emphasize that I'm not, you know, against AI in general. But I just want us to be prudent about using the virtue of prudence, to be careful about what we're using it for, and thinking cautiously. And what I want to leave people with is this reality that we don't have to roll over and just accept AI. We have agency. We can choose to not do all that we can do. We can choose to set down these tools and not use them, whether it's in the classroom or in our homes or in our churches. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean that we have to do it.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, English professor and author, Alan Noble, talking about his Substack piece, Why Should We Just Accept AI? On tomorrow's program, it's Bradley Green on the differences between critical theory and Christianity.
I suggest in the book that critical theory is a kind of alternative religion or alternative theology with its own doctrine of creation or what is reality, its own doctrine of sin or what is the human dilemma, and its own doctrine of redemption.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.